Your next case is case number 69966, K&P Homes versus Christiana Trust. Welcome, Mr. Wright, Mr. Nitz.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is John Wright. I represent K&P Homes, the appellant in this certified question case.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wright.
May I reserve 5 minutes?
Sure.
Your Honor, the question being posed today by the Federal District Court is whether or not your decision in SFR, specifically from the way that I read the question was posed, the application of the extinguishment, the true priority lien question, no other. In other words, whether or not this court's decision that the HOA lien is a true priority lien, which has the effect of extinguishing a first deed of trust, is to be applied retroactively. And our position is clear that the decision itself evidences this. First and foremost, because you're talking about a statute that's been in place for 25 years without being called into question or overturned. So you're talking about what the law is and always has been, not what the law will be. So clearly it has retroactive effect. I think retroactive is almost a misnomer because statutes have prospective effect. And so what the court is doing is simply enforcing a statute prospectively from when it took place back in 1991. It's also evident because SFR court did not specifically say otherwise. And the default position is that when you're interpreting a statute, that unless you say specifically that this decision is only to be applied prospectively, it is always applied retroactively. It's also evident from the decision simply because it also was applied to the litigants in that case. And the decision remanded the case back to the district court for findings consistent with the opinion. So anytime that you apply a decision to the litigants, it applies to all others who are similarly situated, who are not procedurally barred or barred by res judicata for some reason. So in this case, and what happened, what happened after this case is even more evident. There have been about a half a dozen decisions from this court applying the SFR decision as the basis, the foundation for other issues and extensions thereof. That wouldn't happen unless this court had intended to apply this retroactively. Also, you remanded about 200, as far as I know, cases that were dismissed in the district court for one reason or another. Stating in all of those remands that those are overturned because they were not consistent with existing law. So all of that was presented to the Federal District Court, and yet, after denying my motion for reconsideration of his dismissal of my counterclaim, the court suggested, well, maybe we should hear from the State Supreme Court on what its intention was when it issued that opinion. And therefore, we took the bait and ask for certification. The Federal District Court is using the Chevron standard to apply to this case, and it's simply inapplicable for a few reasons. Primarily because there's no new rule of law that was pronounced in SFR. There's no clear precedent that was overturned, and there's no new principle of law that was established. It was merely interpreting a statute that had been in books for 25 years or so. Nothing new came out of that. Nothing new for the proposition that a prior recorded lien has the ability to extinguish a subsequent recorded lien in a foreclosure. That's not new to anybody. The idea that first in time and first in right, we're a race notice state, we've always been that way. So there's no change in the law with respect to that as well. The Harper decision, which we cited to in our briefs, came out after Chevron, some 20 years afterwards. And in that case, the Supreme Court took a critical look at Chevron and said, look, the legal imperative to apply a rule of law retroactively after the case announcing the rule has already done so to the parties must prevail over any claim based on retroactivity under Chevron. So, again, everything about the SFR decision tells us that it is being applied retroactively. In Yellow Cab, which is a recent decision of the Supreme Court, you held that the Chevron oil factors are not to be overturned in every circumstance. There are still some that it might apply, but it's a pretty extreme example. It's a paradigm case. When a court expressly overrules precedent on which the contest would otherwise be decided differently and by which the parties may previously have regulated their conduct. You don't have that in this case whatsoever.
In response to your supplemental authorities, your friends on the other side suggest that the Yellow Cab decision, or I think it's Yellow Cab, should be limited to the constitutional setting in which it arose. Could you comment on that?
Yes, it was critical in that case. The Yellow Cab decision said that Breithaupt was rightly decided, but for the wrong reasons, and that the analysis should have stopped when we discovered that this was about an amendment to a constitution that wasn't overturning anything like that. But the issue is essentially the same, because there's no change in the law. If there is, then you have to go back and take a look at what's going to be the effect on people. And if you look at all the cases that the opposition has cited in their response to my supplemental authority, you'll notice that every single one of them, the courts were overturning existing precedent, long-standing existing precedent, or in one case, coming up with a whole new principle of law. But every single one of those instances took away something that was already there or added something completely new. And that's not what happened in this case. So even though the context of the Breithaupt decision is a little bit different, the outcome is the same. We don't have any new change. They can't identify one precedent that was overturned by the SFR decision. Essentially what they're saying is that it took them by surprise, and therefore, it's not fair.
But similar to the argument before this one in a bit.
Yeah, unfortunately, I wasn't here for the whole thing, so I didn't see that. But and you know, I don't know of too many aggressive attorneys or committed litigants who don't say, "Gee, I never saw that coming," when they lose a case. But that's not the standard. The standard has to be something more concrete than that. There has to be some expectations that were disappointed because they were relying on something that had been either upheld by this court or written in law for a long period of time. The examples that they cite to in their brief, Rodriguez, the Supreme Court in that case, a state Supreme Court, struck down as unconstitutional a law that excluded farm workers from workers' compensation. And in that instance, that had been a long-standing law. It was an exclusion for farm workers. You don't have to have workers' compensation law. All of a sudden they said, that's unconstitutional. It violates due process. But can we apply that retroactively? They said, no, we can't do that because that would implicate people criminally. It would open up liability going decades back. We have to work this going forward. And so what they've done is they come up and say, well, we didn't expect it and nobody else did. Well, okay. That's kind of tough to buy. It's not the right standard because they haven't shown that there's been a change, but even if it were the right standard, clearly there were a lot of expectation that this law is a true priority lien. The word lien appears in the statute some 50 times. Payment priority doesn't. There were decisions from the NRED in December 2012, which made it clear this is a true priority lien. I've attached some stuff to my reply brief, including the Fannie Mae advisories and to servicers, requiring that their servicers pay these assessments if they're located in states where HOA assessments have priority over first deeds of trust. And they say this specifically to protect our priority interest. nothing else. So you even have their lawyers sending out red alert. The priority has now changed from 6 months to 9 months. You better pay it. If you don't, then you're going to get extinguished. This is from 2009. It's from Stella Wilmer. Those people represent Wells Fargo. You've seen the affidavit of Lisman, who was one of the drafters of the Uniform Act, who states that Fannie Mae was actually one of the people, was actually the party that came up with the idea of a six-month super priority in order to balance out these issues. So there's no chance that they didn't see this coming. In fact, the deed of trust in this case has a planned unit development rider, which says that if the if the homeowner doesn't pay the HOA assessment, that the bank can step in and pay that in order to protect its priority interest. They have taken the subject away from the issue of whether or not this is a true priority lien and have stated, well, we didn't know that they were going to strike down the mortgage savings clause. That's not what the question presented is, but it has the same issue, which is, well, where is the clear line of precedent that was overturned when the court said that?
Excuse me, Mr. Wright? I'm sorry. But it took 20 years for those kind of alerts and these kind of rulings to start coming down. So to say for 20 years people had anticipated it, I can't believe that the first homeowners association lien that was executed was 20 years later. I mean, it seemed to be a little bit of a surprise, or not necessarily a surprise, but certainly a matter of some contention.
Well, it's certainly a matter of contention, but I think the reason that it came to the forefront is because obviously the banks during the crisis decided, at least a lot of them did, that they weren't going to foreclose on all of the properties all at once. And so they're holding on to a bunch of inventory. They're letting people stay in their homes who are not paying. And meanwhile, some of these places are empty. Some of them are occupied. But the HOAs still need to get paid. Now, HOAs would traditionally wait until the bank foreclosed, and then they would go and collect their money because they're a senior lien. They get paid off from that. But if the banks are holding on to all the inventory and not foreclosing, the HOAs are not getting paid, no one's paying for all these improvements.
But Mr. Wright, then that's an interpretation based on an external event 20 years after the statute was imposed.
Yeah, but at the time that the statute was created, and in SFR court you even mention it, that the intent of having the super priority lien was to incentivize the banks. So you had two potential people to collect from. You had the homeowner who's liable for the entirety of the lien. And you have the bank, who is only liable in order to protect its security interest, to the 6 months, and now it's 9 months. And that was to strike a balance, but it was always there. The fact that they didn't challenge it until it became critical mass for them because they started to lose properties left and right, that's a different story. And I dug back and I found a decision from as far back as 2006, which is before this became critical mass, where Jackie Glass actually ruled on this very issue and said, well, it's a senior priority lien and they're extinguished. Now we got to figure out what happens with the rest of the money. But just because it didn't go in front of you doesn't mean that it wasn't in operation all this time. It wasn't challenged before this time.
You've got about a minute and 50 seconds.
Yeah, okay. Sit down. Thank you.
Mr. Nitz.
Mr. Nitz, assisting you at council table is?
My associate, Natalie Lehman. We're here on behalf of Christiana Trust. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justices. May it please the court. In requesting that the SFR decision be applied prospectively only, Christiana Trust is seeking to restore the balance struck by the 1982 UCIOA and the 1991 legislature that adopted it. Prospective application of SFR would give all the parties the benefit of the bargain that they had or expected at the time of these HOA sales. Prospective application only would have no effect on the homeowners associations that went to sale prior to the decision. All the benefits that the HOA, all the benefits to the HOA that the amicus CAI claims to be trying to protect would still be protected whether the statute is applied retroactively or prospectively. And there's no significant effect on the buyers, except elimination of the paper equity that they obtained by the decision. They still had the pennies on the dollar purchase price, they still had the foreclosure deed without warranty, and they still had the rental income stream that continued until the banks foreclosed. Prospective application only does, however, have an enormous effect on the banks and upon the homeowners. First deeds of trust on past sales would be protected. The banks could then foreclose and recover part of their losses. And the homeowners would have the effect on them minimized because either their debt would be reduced or eliminated. In addition, homeowners might have a claim to the excess proceeds from the sale. The effect on litigation would also be dramatic. There wouldn't be a need, or much of a need, for new quiet title actions because the rights between the buyer and the banks would be clear. The other thing, it would have an immediate effect of probably resolving most of the pending litigation.
What effect does all this have on title insurance companies, do you think?
Well, for one, for past sales, they were insuring if the banks went to sale after an HOA foreclosure, they recognized the foreclosure on the deed of trust as being the controlling factor. Prior to the SFR decision, all the players in the industry, the HOA, their trustees, the banks, and the title companies, and even the buyers had the expectation that an understanding that the super priority lien was a payment priority only, and it was only payable upon the foreclosure of the first deed of trust. SFR wrote, and from what little the record contains, nothing appears to have stopped U.S. Bank from determining the precise super priority amount in advance of the sale or paying the entire amount and requesting the balance. Well, the procedural posture of that case limited the record before the court to considering, well, it was a motion to dismiss, so it had to consider the complaint and it had to consider the statute. The court made certain assumptions and was required to take as true things which were not in fact true. In briefing the matter for the court, we brought to the court evidence of what the true understanding of the parties, all the parties was at the time of these sales, at the time of that decision. If this evidence had been before the court, we think the decision would have come down differently. Perhaps more in line with the decision of the dissent. Our record included the 2012 Stonefield case. And there, tens of HOAs and trustees rejected the bank's attempts to pay the super priority lien because they characterized it as a cooked-up scheme. Because prior to the first mortgagee's foreclosure, there wasn't even a super priority lien triggered. SFR made Nevada unique among all UCIOA jurisdictions. By rejecting payment priority only, and by allowing extinguishment of the first deeds of trust by a nonjudicial foreclosure sale. It was argued that the SFR decision already decided the issue of retroactivity. It clearly did not. And I point to the order accepting the certified question, as no clearly controlling Nevada precedent explicitly answers this legal question, The answer may determine part of the federal case. We accept the certified question. That order wouldn't have been written if SFR decided all of these issues. SFR specifically did not issue an opinion that its decision would be applied retroactively. One of the things that we pointed to was the mortgage protection clauses, or MPCs. That's another aspect where the Supreme Court in SFR went against the expectations or understandings of the parties. Because after the statute went into effect, and even after the SFR decision, homeowners associations regularly included these MPCs in their CC&Rs, showing that they wanted to protect the fixed mortgagee, and showing that they recognized the payment penalty only. On this certified question, we're not asking that the SFR decision be overturned. Its holdings would control for sales after that decision, all the way up, at least until the passage of SB 306.
Let me ask you just on that point. You don't contend that SFR overruled any existing precedent or established anything inconsistent with prior decision, right?
That's right. It was a case of first impression, and we would agree that it did not overrule any clear past precedent.
And that distinguishes it somewhat Chevron.
Pardon?
That distinguishes SFR somewhat from Chevron.
No, because it did announce a new rule of law that was not clearly foreshadowed. And that's the focus of our argument. It was not clearly foreshadowed. In fact, it went against the standards of the industry, the expectation of all of the parties that participated in or that were involved.
You have a problem with the UCO, the Uniform Act. I mean, the Act said that it was a priority to the extent of the 6 or now 9 months of unpaid. It's the text of the statute. So I don't know what you do with that. I understand the industry practice argument, but in fitting this into a retroactivity issue, you have to look at the statutory text. It was on the books. SFR didn't create the statute.
I accept that is true, Your Honor, but what the UCIOA did wasn't come out in favor of the HOAs. What the UCIOA did was strike a balance.
They did not establish a payment priority. You would agree with me on that, would you not? So you're saying that that was a payment priority statutorily, and that's what the UCIOA attended.
The UCIOA created a super priority lien.
It did, not a payment priority.
But the super priority lien could be enforced either by a payment priority, or it could be enforced by a judicial sale.
But the draft Uniform Act gave adopting states the option of doing it by judicial or non-judicial. And Nevada included non-judicial. What do you do with that as a court? We just say we're not going to enforce the letter of the statute?
Well, I would submit, first of all, the UCIOA suggested that the foreclosures be done as they are under the power of sale in the states. And the UCIOA provided for notice to all of the lien holders, expressly provided notice to all the lien holders. Beyond that, how that lien is enforced was not directly stated by the UCIOA. How it was enforced. Yes, they recognized the super priority lien, but they didn't state how it could be enforced.
Right, and Nevada wrote its own version of that.
Nevada wrote its own version of that. Nevada said it could be enforced by an action to enforce. And that's one of the points that is critical to the Chevron oil analysis. That's one of the decisions that is subject to the Chevron oil analysis. The decision that those words, action to enforce, would include non-judicial or judicial, is precisely the issue. Now, the dissent said it should have been judicial only. But that was the interpretation of the court, and it was that interpretation of the court which was not clearly foreshadowed. It is that interpretation of the court that subjects it to the Chevron oil analysis.
So you're giving up on the payment priority piece of your argument?
No. No, not at all. The statute, the super priority lien was enforceable as a payment priority only, and it was that interpretation in the industry up until the SFR decision. Action to enforce could be waiting till the first deed of trust foreclosed and asserting the payment priority at that time. It didn't require that the HOA foreclose on a super priority lien. The HOA could have foreclosed on a sub-priority lien, or the HOA could have judicially foreclosed, or the HOA could have...
Right, but to do any of that, my point is that, sure, they could have waited and asserted a priority, but the statute allowed them also to, in your interpretation and that of the dissent, judicially foreclose.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The balance by prospective application of SFR, the balance struck by the UCIOA and the legislature would not be tipped one degree either way. The retroactive application, however, would have an enormous effect on the banks. The Amicus MBA suggested conservatively that it would affect a $200 million loss. But given the number of first deeds of trust at risk at the time of the SFR decision, it could approach $1 billion. KMP suggested that the lenders just hoped that they could pressure the HOAs into accepting their view of the statute. Well, the reasonable lenders would not have rested $1 billion loss on mere hopes. This was the standard of the industry. All of the banks interpreted it this way up until the SFR decision. Yes, they might have approached it with a belt and suspenders point of view. Yes, they might have said, well, arguably there is a super priority lien and we will pay that, but there are many other reasons to do that. One of the reasons would be when their own forced closure sale goes forward, that it would clear title for the prospective purchaser. One of the reasons would be if it went to sale and somebody bought it at the sale, they could rent it out. Well, then they would have to deal with evicting the tenants. So it makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. The FHFA guidelines, Fannie Mae guidelines, all of those things come into effect the same sort of thing too. Their guidelines apply across the across the United States, whether it's judicial, non-judicial, UCIOA, or not. The inequity of the loss of the first deeds of trust is not one of the banks are making. Their 9-month super priority payment requests and payments were rejected. The MPCs assured them that their liens wouldn't be extinguished. The homeowners associations and trustees said, we don't even have a super priority lien until you foreclose. They were not assured the right to notice and an opportunity to cure. They were constrained by consumer protection statutes from foreclosing, which delayed or stopped the foreclosures. The Morales-Izquierdo case, I would like to point out to the court, was expressly overruled by the Ninth Circuit in the case of Garfias-Rodriguez versus Holder, 702F3rd 504, 2012 case, which continued to recognize the Chevron Oil case. It said in the specific case of conflicting Board of Immigration Appeals and Ninth Circuit opinions, a different rule would apply from Montgomery Ward. The Morales-Izquierdo case applied neither, and the Ninth Circuit said that was wrong. If I might have just...
Please wrap it up.
Pardon?
Wrap it up.
I will. Applying the SFR case only to HOA sales from September 18, 2014 forward puts all participants back on an even playing field. Property sold prior to the HOA sales would be deemed sold subject to the first deed of trust for those prior sales. The HOAs would keep the proceeds from the sales. Professional property purchasers like K&P would continue to get their rental stream. They would still have possession of the properties. The mortgagees could recover part of their equity, and the homeowners' loans could either be discharged whole or in part. It's for these reasons that Christiana Trust requests that the court answer the certified question that all three holdings of SFR, the super priority lien, the judicial foreclosure, and the MPCs being unenforceable, should not be applied retroactively.
Thank you, Mr. Nix.
Thank you.
Mr. Wright, I'm going to round you off to 3 minutes. Give you an extra minute and seven.
Okay. We're not suggesting that Chevron Oil has been overturned. What we are saying is that this court has made very clear that it's only applicable in extremely few number of cases, and that's where we have this paradigm shift. What they're suggesting is something that there's no precedent for. And in the same case that Justice Hardesty quoted for the paradigm case, the James Beam case, U.S. Supreme Court case, Justice White stated that there is no precedent in civil cases for applying a rule to the parties of the case, but not to others. And that's what they're asking you to do. You clearly applied this rule to the litigants in SFR. He just doesn't want it being applied to anybody else. Presumably, he wants it stripped away from the SFR litigants as well, the 200 cases that you remanded, and the half dozen cases that you've used the case in since then. He made a statement that all of the parties had this certain expectation, but clearly the purchasers didn't have their same expectation that the banks had. And to say that the banks wouldn't do anything unreasonable, these are the people who came up with the ninja loan. To think that they wouldn't do something that is unreasonable with people's money, it's a fallacy.
Well, but you did have a split. I mean, you had a close split on the judicial foreclosure versus non-judicial foreclosure question.
That is correct. It was a split. However, I would point out that the question that the federal court is asking is whether or not the priority lien status is what is retroactive or not. And everybody agreed that it's a true priority lien.
Right.
I agree. So, and also, I believe this issue was taken up in the fact that the amicus briefs to the petition for rehearing, the amicus brief filed by, I think, a half a dozen banks, said that you shouldn't apply the SFR decision retroactively. And then in your order denying the petition for rehearing, you state that you did, in fact, take those arguments into consideration in coming up with your decision and denying that petition. Lastly, I'd just like to address your question about the title companies. 116.311.6.4, and I believe today it's 5, states that the recording of the CC&Rs perfects the lien. Now, the CC&Rs almost inevitably come before the first deed of trust. So just by first in time, the entirety of the HOA's lien is perfected, and prior to the bank's lien at the time of recording, the sub 2, which is the 9 months, actually reduces that down to 9 months. That's the gift to the bank. It's like the entire thing is prior to you, but we're making just this amount prior to you, making the exception to that, and the rest of this is sub-priority. So, all right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sir.
Ahmed, don't the CC&Rs generally, in your experience, have a subordination clause to a new first purchase, first mortgage, something like that on any impact? Or?
Some do, some don't. I don't draft those. Some people that do draft them might say that. Again, that's a matter of first impression, but at the same time, the law is on the books that you can't alter or amend or waive your rights. And I believe that is there because the people who draft those CC&Rs are not the homeowners. It's not even the HOA. It's the developer. So you don't want the developer stripping rights-of-way perspectively from the HOA that the legislature said these are vital for the HOA to survive.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Council, for your arguments and briefs in this matter. Mr. Wright. And Mr. Nitz, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
This matter stands.